made our guest take off his headphones.
Yeah!
We are back, people. We're back.
This is a big podcast.
This
right
is
here.
A big one. Not only is it just big in relation to how amazing our guest is and the history with everything, but it's also big because this is our new cycle, we call cycles.
Yeah, we do a whole bunch.
We do a bunch in one little weekend.
Right, every 28 days.
Every 28 days, we're like your period.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
We basically have, you know, we do them all in one weekend, and this is in New York. I'm in the kitchen.
Yeah,
I'm in the living room kitchen.
Cooking it up.
Yeah, I'm cooking it up. I'm the little bee of podcasting with you guys. My name is Jensen.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Eric.
They're from It's the Real. We're the Hype Men Podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in. We're in New York, like I said.
Yes.
Nice weather today.
Good weather today.
Good weather today.
Good turnout so far.
Good. We're doing great. Podcast running.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
This is an epic podcast.
Oh, I know.
Talk about hip-hop history.
Well, before we get into it.
Yeah.
It's epic also because we had drummer Travis Barker produce our theme music this week.
Yeah, it's weird because you can't really hear the drums too well.
No, he's muted. Though. He's muted, yeah.
But Travis Barker.
Can we turn my snare up in the headphones?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Blink-182.
He's got his own album coming out. He's got a song with Wayne and Rick Ross and all these people. And he took some time out to do our opening intro song.
Which is... That's big for us.
Really big, but also a lie.
Yeah, not true.
He didn't do it.
At all.
That's Greg Mayo. He's our engineer, a good friend of ours.
Yeah.
One day we will have to say it's not him because he's famous and stuff. But for now, we're going to lie every week and say it's someone else. Eric, this is weird for me. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, all right.
Let me explain why.
More weird than usual.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The podcast is done by three people.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Two of them are brothers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Two of them have East Coast hip hop. You know, they have friends in hip hop. They know you go to shows and people are nice to you. One in particular is not nice to you.
Right.
You know, you have this storied past here. You know what I mean? There's another guy on the podcast, which is me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to talk in third person.
Right. No.
I'm from the West Coast. I probably have a higher voice. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a little more... grating.
You
know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I probably have more opinions that are...
You're different.
I'm different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Annoying.
A little annoying.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and be like, I'm an easy pill to swallow. I'm a bit annoying at times.
Ladies.
Girlfriends might agree with you.
You're an acquired taste.
I'm an acquired taste.
Yeah.
And I'm totally fine with that. Rap Radar website.
Yes.
Posts Jeff...
You didn't have to sigh after you said Rap Radar. Rap Radar.
Rap Radar posts.
I'm sorry. I can't speak yet. I really can't.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
That's the longest fucking introduction in podcast history.
They know.
About
listen.
To go to sleep.
Listen.
Saturday morning.
Can do this one. We actually had to start over the podcast.
Yo,
purely.
My laugh penetrates this microphone. Yeah,
it actually popped the microphone. No, it says Rap Radar posts. Check out this new podcast. You guys will really enjoy it. It's with Jeff and Eric of It's the Real.
Who you like?
Who you like?
You'll love them.
You'll
love them.
And their annoying friend. It's a picture of me with you guys, and I love that. I come from this Howard Stern.
I can't do no wrong.
No, I love
I'm
that
on
shit.
A hot streak, man.
All you do
is win.
That's my thing. So I'm here to prove that I am both annoying, and I feel like I bring something important to the podcast.
Yes,
I'm here to do both.
No, my problem is, hi, I'm Elliot Wilson,
by the way. Elliot Wilson.
Is here.
Capricorn.
Yeah.
No, I think I know everything, so I was telling Eric that I felt like in the first couple of podcasts, because, you know, basically it's like the Breakfast Club. You know, you have three entities, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of Mike, you know, talking over each other. I'm the king of that when I do my brief little radio things.
Yeah.
And like, who's in charge and who's running the point?
Yeah.
So really, it seems like in this show, you're the one.
Yeah.
Jeff's the two and Eric's the three.
Really? So I feel like Eric's the two.
Now I think Eric.
I don't really listen to the podcast.
No, but
Jeff is surfing the internet while you're talking.
Jeff's going to always get his zinger in
because
he's a smart ass.
Yep.
So someone's got to set the table. So
Eric's a dumbass.
I'm used to Eric setting the table.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden I got a new guy that's setting the table.
Yeah.
So I was just a little judgmental.
To be fair, I thought we were like Carmelo and Stoudemire. We were one and one A.
In that analogy,
we're all one and one A.
Exactly. In that analogy, I'm Stephon Marbury.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's
a little
true
annoying.
Also, because you got to think I did so many sketches with them. I known them for so long. So then, I don't know you. So then it's just like
the new is. Know. It's weird. It's I understand.
Mm. See, I feel like I've known Jensen for like 3 years,
almost
now.
3 years.
Yeah.
And I still don't like you.
I don't think that's going to change soon. But we do. We have one of our most esteemed hip-hop guests in podcast history, Elliot Wilson.
Yeah. Rap Radar.
Rap Radar.
I mean,
Ego Trip. Let's just go through Ego Trip.
Respect Magazine. That's my new shit. Respect Magazine.
Respect Magazine.
Rick Ross on the cover.
Most Source. Yeah, The Source.
It defined me for many years, right?
Yeah. So, I mean... I don't even know where...
Jay-Z's best friend. Right?
Jay-Z. Yes. This man has a birthday party.
My name is Tyron Smith.
Yeah. Ty-Ty. You're...
That's right.
Ty-Ty's title can never be taken.
No, hold on.
Stop. Wait. You have a birthday
party.
I'm
the IBF heavyweight champion of Jay-Z friends.
I've one praise and then one issue.
Yeah. Oh, I got an issue,
like
too.
Like me. Like his feelings about me. My praise is, uh-huh, Jay-Z comes to your birthday party. That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Guess who doesn't come to your birthday party?
Who's that?
Jeff and Eric Rosenthal.
Yo, we ran into B-Dot the next day at Power 105, and B-Dot's like, yo, where were you last night? We're like, oh,
we weren't invited.
And that's the truth. Everyone was like, where were you guys? Like, you're close.
You really weren't invited.
That's funny, we weren't invited.
But I didn't invite nobody. No. That's the thing. Yeah. No.
Yeah, so my bad. Have another birthday
Jay-Z party.
Yeah. Just Jay-Z and
the
us.
Next time Jay-Z comes to your birthday party,
yeah,
bring Jensen.
Yeah. If you have any, I went to Jay-Z's birthday.
There you go.
I did one year.
That's really good.
Kanye took
what his 55th.
Nice. No, he had a bowling party at Chelsea Pierce.
Nice.
How tasty was the appetizers?
I don't remember. To be honest with you, I was so out of my element. I was just like, what? And he wasn't like walking on water, Jay-Z. It was like Blueprint. It was like it was just starting to be an entity. You know what I mean? So yeah. Fun birthday though.
But let's get right into it.
I'm sorry, guys, you weren't invited to the birthday party. No. I didn't invite anybody. My wife. Well, so I'll blame it all on my wife.
That's why we invited you here.
That's right.
That's fine.
It's an intervention.
Yeah.
Let's get right.
We're no
into
longer
it.
Friends.
Let's get right into it. How do you feel about the Mets this year coming up?
That's what everybody wants to know.
I'm ignoring them because
there's a new sort of hierarchy there.
Right,
America owns them.
Yes,
America owns them. Major League Baseball owns them.
So Madoff just fucked us, right? Madoff.
Yeah.
But okay, so you're Queens born and bred.
Yes. Woodside, Queens. 11377 is the zip code.
How do you get into hip hop journalism?
Read the source, and I'd say, well, first I wanted to be a sports writer, and then I thought I could be Howard Cosell, Warner Wolf, those type of people. Mm-hmm. And 86 Mets, like sports, you know, I started getting more into after sports. Started, you know, always loving hip hop, and this really was seeing the source that you could write about this culture, like you could get a job to write about it. You know, I wanted to write first like about straight news, and it just started to bore me. Like, I have no attention span, like I'm like these kids today. So
right.
I was into music and culture and entertainment, and
did you know at the time that people like Jonathan Schechter ran the source?
Yeah, and I wanted to be down. Yeah. I wrote a letter and I tried
like
to
Jonathan
get down.
Schechter being Jews,
right?
Yeah, no, John Schechter's brilliant, and I had a lot of respect for him as editor in chief, and Reggie Dennis, who was the music editor at The Source.
Right.
And I wanted to be down. And I didn't know that there was a music industry and you had to know this person. I just thought, if I write pretty well, they're going to put me on. And then they hired these two editors, Carter Harris and Rob Marriott. They actually were very, very good editors. And Carter now does television stuff for, I think, Friday Night Lights.
Oh, okay. Show. Yeah.
My favorite show. My favorite show in television history.
Him and Cheo Coker, Cheo Adari Coker. He wrote an episode of What's This New Show, Southland.
Yeah.
So they've made a great transition to TV stuff, besides Ego Trip and stuff with that. But, you know, so then I got rejected, and then doing Beatdown and then doing Ego Trip was because I wasn't being recognized by the guard of the sources and the vibes and what existed.
Which is super hip-hop of you.
Yeah. And then by doing the indie thing, they all then jumped on the dick and hired me. And
were all the guys in Ego Trip like sort of rejected stepchildren?
Yeah. We was like, we're dope and no one's recognizing it. We're the best, so we're gonna unify and we're Wu-Tang and fuck everybody. And we're gonna take, you know, what we're gonna do is we're gonna go in there, we're gonna take all your money. We're gonna write for you and get jobs with you and take all your money and then take your money and build our thing and, you know, put out our little zine. And
that's what we did.
Yeah.
The chairman, Sasha and
Sasha Jenkins, me, Chairman Mao. Brent Rollins, Gabe Alvarez.
And the Biz Markie puppet.
And the Biz Markie puppet is our official mascot.
Yes. Right. Yeah. I mean, it was such a fun... I mean, I still read the Book of Lists, the hip-hop list.
Oh, yeah.
I still read it.
Yeah, well, what happened was when I quit The Source, we already had the deal and we were working on the book, but we were kind of like moving slow. So when I quit The Source, because I got mad because they changed the mics on me, Dave Mays, and I quit.
That seems strange.
That's a myth.
No, there's no way.
That didn't really happen.
Yeah.
No, I jumped into the book because everybody else had, back then, writers had a lot of writer-at-large contracts. Like now, they, you know, you could just be an editor-at-large, and all these guys either had jobs or they had writer-at-large gigs. I had no money coming in, so I'm like, we're doing this goddamn book of rappers. So I started we're coming in every day, and we're going to work on it like it's a job, and we did it and
got it done.
And then the funny thing is, while I was finishing the book, I got the call to do XXL in that summer. So when I started XXL, the first issue I did, or I think the second issue, had an Ego Trip book ad. No, Ego Trip book ad was in the first issue. And then in the second issue, XXL, I actually reviewed my own soundtrack to the book, The Big Payback.
Which was on Ruckus. Yeah, on Ruckus. That's funny.
So what's funny, the XXL, it sort of really segued, looking back on it, I didn't view it there, like the Ego Trip part of that source to the Ego Trip to the book Rapless, jumping into being editor of XXL, which wasn't a cool thing in 1999. Right. Didn't seem
cool. Wait, so you reviewed your own album?
Yeah. So I said I'm reviewing my own album.
So you're admitting that XXL was founded on conflict of interest.
And lies. Yeah, it was founded on lies.
Because men.
Yeah, because XXL, I've heard, had a lot of Interscope ads in it.
Yeah. But not for...
Just covers.
I mean, let's explain that. So XXL and Eminem have a very strange relationship. He hated them.
They had beef, yeah.
Beef.
And they got dissed on the Marshall Mathers album.
Let me say your name three times or something. And that XXL,
yeah, well, that's actually, that was my... What happened was when they first had the magazine, they wrote something about questioning white boy in hip-hop.
Yeah, thing. With a very bad picture.
Yeah, and he got offended by it, and Paul was very offended.
Which picture was that?
His eyes, he was like, it's just a fucked up picture,
yeah,
right?
It was an attack. It was
picture.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then... Eminem always had a good relationship with the source. You know, he was on Signed Hype. Yeah, Riggs Morales, who's the Shady A&R now, was music editor, music assistant during all that. So Eminem was really good with the source during the era. So, but you know, he was starting to become the biggest fucking thing. So I get a job at XXL. My main priority is squash the beef with Eminem and his friend. You know, like, let's do a cover where he kidnaps me and pisses on my desk and, you know, like something, Tyler shit. You know, Tyler shit.
We just called it Tyler shit. Oh,
get,
man.
On, get on your Tyler shit and kidnap me and slap me around and eat a cockroach and be on the cover of XXL. Yeah. So then he said no. And then I was like, there was a guy, Don Morris, who works at The Source now. He's like, fuck him. So he had this really horrible illustration of him getting like spanked by his mother.
Yeah,
so the first issue actually saw, I ran this really horrible illustration dissing him. So that's what the thing is. Like, see a picture of my big white ass.
Oh, right.
So then he dissed me. So, you know, and then what happened was when
things that don't come up anymore when you get together with Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but then Benzino went on the attack.
Yeah.
And then that Noah Callahan Bever from Complex, who you guys just interviewed, he brokered a sit down between me and Paul, which was kind of tense.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it was like, you know, how would you like to have an MJ 50 cover? But I control everything. And I said, well, that would be great, but you can't control anything. So, you know, you started from that point, and then, you know, we ended up doing the cover.
I remember.
And that's how the turning point started, and they just took the offensive, you know. I did Murder, Inc. right after, which people forget, and I caught a lot of heat from them.
I forget.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody forgets that.
Yeah. Irv also forgot.
But, you know, then that's how it evolved, you know.
Man.
All right, but, then they kept making bad moves. But the whole point I always said was I put the pressure on them so they would make bad moves and relationships and trying to please everybody and being of the industry. I've always been kind of anti-industry. That's why Ego Trip and now do even Respect. Like, I don't really deal with publicists. I deal with artists through Twitter now. Like, I'm dealing with Rick Ross on Twitter to negotiate this Respect cover. Like,
was
I don't
really,
you know,
done through DMs?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. I mean, then I would call Gabe and he'd help me a little bit. And then I learned who Gucci Pucci was and I finally got his email and I started dealing with Gucci Pucci. And it's like,
which one of the best manager names ever?
It's a great
manager. Alex, you know. You know, he drives me to Fort Lauderdale, to Ross's little compound, and it's like he's got the...
this is a good segue. Let's talk about this.
Yeah,
so Rick Ross is on the cover of the Respect magazine, which is out now. Explain, like, you are one of the few people we can interview to ask what it's like in the compound and mind of Rick Ross. Like, that's not a question we can ask and get a real answer.
Yeah, no, and I thought that there's no way...
What is he hiding behind those fake sunglasses?
And that beard.
I think the funny thing is he is a charming guy. Like, he's a smart guy. I think he's a guy who really, you know, people forget how long he's been in the business and wasn't being recognized. Like, he's one of those guys that got signed by Suave House like 10 years ago and nobody knew who the fuck he was, and he saw everybody get their shot. And he ghost wrote for people and, you know, never, you know. So I feel like, you know, does he play up his image a little bit? Of course. There's some theatrics in it. Like, I think that, but I think when he got, exposed, you know, it made him go harder with the persona, you know. And I think he also conducts himself in a way that he's getting respect now from legit street dudes by the way he conducts himself. So it's like, you know, like people said that Pac, at a certain point, Pac got caught in the lifestyle and started becoming that.
The gimmick
Ross is probably more authentic now than he was back, you know, if you're going to say it by those standards. So it's like, I know, being around him, I think he's definitely not a punk. He's definitely not like some Herb or like, an officer or a cop or that kind of thing. I think he's a dude that's a smart dude. And he's a good rapper and he's getting better. And it just made sense to like really, you know, get to know him and see what he's about and you know, now he's making this move as a mogul where he's trying to, you know, be looked at as somebody who could sign other acts and make them successful, be a Birdman, be a Puffy, be a Jay-Z.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, with Wale and Meek Mill and Pill and all those guys. And, you know, I didn't see that coming when I negotiated the cover. I didn't know he was really making those moves. So now it looks like I'm a fucking genius. But I really know. Yeah. I mean, I knew Wale was talking to me about possibly signing with him. You know, Wale's emotional, so I didn't know if he was really going to do it. And, you know, so I was like, are you really going to sign with him? Like, so, you know, keeping in that contact. So it just worked out.
Yeah, we had heard about the beginnings of the WMD
deal. Because you guys are like Joey IE besties, right?
We would walk in the building and see certain people there, and we were okay.
Yeah. Right. I think that the thing was that Warner showed the most personal interest early on. I think Joey was a big fan. He really loved his verse on Devil in a New Dress. And like, you know, it's like, so then it was like, I think they pursued it the most aggressively, ultimately believing in him. And, you know, I mean, his situation with Def Jam, where he's kind of like got one album, but he could go either way.
Right.
You know, I interviewed him for Rap Radar Now, a newer interview. And he's like, you know, I was like, so you going to leave Def Jam, man? You got one more album. Like, what's going on? Because, like, I don't know, my next solo situation, it's got to be an Albert Pujols numbers.
Oh, no.
I need Albert Pujols numbers for my...
I wish we had that just so we could play the Pujols. Just have it say Pujols.
It's like
over
a Cam Newton.
I guess I get it. I mean, it's funny you brought up Tupac, because one of my things about Tupac is
Biggie too. Biggie wasn't really a fucking, you know, the drug kingpin of Brooklyn.
Saw Notorious the movie, and an entirely different.
No, but who could tell those stories? I mean, Nas. You know, it's like, you know, you could tell
stories. Lil Kim,
a true street maverick.
Jeezy, right? Jeezy.
She hustled me out of a fucking PayPal CD.
Yeah, so I've heard this story. They told me that you bought a CD.
PayPal, like, I think me and Julia Beverly and maybe four other people, like,
I heard it was like hundreds of thousands,
trillions. Like, we're waiting for our CD. We paid our $9.99. Yeah. I mean, come on, Blanco, give us our music.
So you've been
free my music, Blanco.
Have you went online to explain that you have not received your CD yet?
Yeah, it's like it's a Twitter joke. Like, the thing I love, you know, I always talk about now. It's like with Rap Radar, me and B-Dot, Brian Miller works for me. We're constantly telling people in a nice way, you're relevant or you're not. Like, you're important or you're not. You're in the conversation. Like, you know, and you got someone like Lil' Kim, who's not relevant musically, but she's still in the conversation because her theatrics are just so ridiculous that if I just mention anything on her Twitter, 20 people hit me back. Like, you can't say she's not relevant, but she's relevant for all the wrong reasons.
Exactly.
Like, we're laughing at her, but, like, you know, the way the internet cycle moves, she's still in the conversation. Yeah. So, you know, you can't deny that. So,
how do you
like,
feel about this at them or dap them thing?
What's that?
It's a Twitter attitude where if you're going to talk behind somebody's back, you have to directly talk.
I don't agree with that.
Because
I'm creating a movie. So I want to talk around you. I want to talk at you. But sometimes I want to do a joke that I'm just talking about you. I mean, obviously, I feel like you're either following me or someone's going to say Elliot Wilson talk crazy about you. Like, whatever you say is on the record. But I think that, you know, I think some jokes are just like speaking outside and commenting on situations.
Right,
you know?
And I think that if you at somebody when you're making a joke about them, then they immediately take it seriously.
Oh, it's more pointed.
Yeah. I've seen you get into some squabbles with artists over that shit.
Just one.
Well, I can out the Tyler thing about Pete, right? I feel like I can tell that story.
Sure, yeah.
Tyler, I put Pete
he called
on,
you a faggot
like well,
he
not
calls
me.
Everybody else.
Well, yeah, I mean, no. I put on Pete Wentz, who used to be in Fall Out Boy. I was on Odd Future so early, I said, listen, these dudes, I mean, Pete's not really an assigning thing anymore with Decadence, but I've sent Colin Monroe there. We've tried to reach out to a bunch of artists for his label.
Yeah.
And I said, you're not going to get in this bidding war. But there's these kids. We went to their first show, and it's just amazing.
Amazing
I said,
energy
it's,
and all
it's,
that.
It's, I've never seen anything like it. I said, you gotta follow up. So Pete, I explain the whole story. Pete leaves that night when we explain it to him, and he tweets, hashtag free Earl. That's it. And this is very early.
This is
like... For after the first show.
Super early, Talon's like, fuck you, faggot. You don't know Earl.
They retweeted it. Actually,
it was like
it's
3
weird.
Months ago.
Yeah, 3 months ago. Even crazier than that, they retweet it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like one of the first, I think it is the first celebrity free Earl ever.
I think so, yeah.
And so he retweets
Wentz
it.
Wentz is like, I'm getting at it.
Yeah, he didn't try.
Nah, it's natural.
But it is natural. So he wrote free Earl. They retweet it. Months go by. Tyler becomes, you know, the next coming.
The creator
and
that
now
he
it's
is.
Fuck that faggot Pete Wentz. Fuck Pete Wentz. It's like it's a. It's
Wait, how does that
Steve
go
Harvey.
From that?
I don't know. We want
to
know.
You see the direct connection.
Don't lie to us, Elliot. No. All your years in this business.
Yeah, tell us the inside. No, I don't know. But that's a good example of. Now Pete, you know, now Pete's not like fuck that dude. He's like, I don't know what happened. I think the kid's a genius.
But I used to snap on Jesse Washington when he ran Blaze because he felt like he should deal with the artist directly, and a lot of the dramas that happened was. you know, dealing so much with the artists directly and stuff, because, you know, and the climate was a little different back then. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it was more blatantly where artists would threaten journalists. And
right. Maybe they would add them or dap them.
That's right. Yeah. A lot of add them or dap them culture, because, you know, nowadays, if you're an artist, at the end of the day, you know, we have our squabbles, obviously, but it's not the same thing, because at the end of the day, they go to the comments, they see everybody saying all this negative stuff about them. They're very aware of what the fucked up things that are being said about them are. Well, it's not shock anymore.
What do you think?
You know?
what do you think?
No, but just get back with the Jesse point. Now I find myself that in this culture where I put myself out there more through social media, the best way to get your job is through that. Like, you're not on Twitter and you're not following the right people, you can't do your job. Like, you have to build your RSS feed off your Twitter.
Right.
And communicating and getting stuff done in this culture works a lot better now dealing with artists directly through Twitter. But the bad side is, you could easily get into a Pete Wentz style situation.
Well,
that's what I was
going to say. On that flip side, even more, you can have situations, which did happen before Twitter too, of journalists being roughed up by or threatened by artists. Mm-hmm. And when has that happened with you?
I talked about it before. Like, I had a problem with Sadat X and AZ and Dress from Black Sheep and, you know, like little things. But, you know, back then, I just think the criticism was different. It was a situation where, like, if you're Drez and you made this great Black Sheep album, the first one, and then you make your second one and it's not good, no one's really telling you it sucks until your first, like, little record review in One Nut and One Nut Magazine or Herb or something.
Not Dave Gossett, Can I Rock It? You don't think Dave Gossett told him?
If Gossett didn't tell him, you know, he's like, I can't get 16 on this album, like the first one. But
the rapping A&R.
So, yeah, but now, like, it's like people are dissing you and they say, like, it's a different culture where back then, you know, your record review was kind of the first honest critique you got of something outside of, like, your management and your label and everyone kind of sideways telling you it's great or not. Like, now, you know, you're making parody videos about them. It's like criticism's out there more. So the good side of it and the bad side of it is that everyone thinks they're a critic and it's like a fucking clever contest. But, you know, the competitor in me is that I still want to win that. Like, I want to be funny on Twitter. I want to be smarter. I want to have the best observation.
Of course.
And I want to be in the conversation and control the conversation at times.
Yeah. All right.
And that's what we try to do too with our videos. Like, I think when artists become smarter and know how to sell themselves more, they become more accepting of what we're trying to do.
They understand how to use it as an avenue.
Right. And going back to Ross, that's a great thing that he's doing. You know, he's redefined himself, you know, from Officer Ricky to Rosé to this situation now where it's like, You can't deny the guy's impact on the culture.
No question.
He's trying to now grow out of that, you know, and everybody loves that. Everybody loves the whole adversity story. Everyone loves that. I thought this guy was done.
Yeah.
And, you know, now he's a star again. Like, we all, when we saw 50 with the video with Tia and all that, we was like, this guy's fucking over. Like, this is the craziest shit I've ever seen. Yeah. Like, and then now it's like, you know,
you talk about 50 ending people's careers. One person he buried.
I'll help you.
Well, no, I'm saying
Eric can't even get it out.
No, he's so scared. He's so scared.
I'm saying the so one person scared. Who would backfire.
This is Eric.com.
The one person who would backfire on was Ross. Ross became bigger than ever.
Yeah.
Ross really stopped that momentum.
He excelled.
Well, he put out a good album and then put out a better album after that.
That's right.
And the mixtapes. And, you know, it is the music, though. But I think even 50 would respect that part of it. I think 50 can't stand him and 50 can't take that, you know, that people are embracing this guy whose past is under question. But, you know, 50, the competitor, him and the musician, man, he can't deny BMF. It's like, BMF's the type of record where, even I think I was talking to Torre on the street, like, Torre, you know, obviously didn't like, you know, hated Minaj and didn't like Rick Ross.
Yeah.
But, like, BMF was the summer anthem. It's like, a certain level, you know, as repetitive as it is with somebody you could criticize, like Sugar, it's a very strong record. And it's like, for that to be a record where you're shouting out street dudes and it's a crossover record and it's like the summer anthem. It's like completely unconventional.
I mean, well, it's arguably the best beat picker in hip hop.
Oh, Ross.
And I mean, his ear's there. And then, to see him work, I mean, I went to his little Swisher Suite studios, which is like his little compound in his house. And, you know, they're in there like workhorses. Like, and that's the thing, too. It's like the exciting energy of it. Like, he gets it. Like, he's signing Wale. He's flying Wale to Miami. He's twit picking that while he's now in the studio. They sit there and make a song. They put it out on Twitter. It's good. Like, you're feeling like you're part of the process.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This guy trying to, like, become a mogul.
Yeah.
You know, right before you. You know?
I have a couple things. Yeah. One, Jeff and I were in the studio with these producers who were Grammy nominated and big time. And they said when they were down with Ross, they went to his mansion for him to listen to beats, and he sat there and he just shouted out ad libs over the beats. Yeah.
Well, that's what I asked him too. There's a story in Respect where I talk about. So how'd you come up with MC Hammer, BMF? He's like, you know, the Hammer when he's like, you know, I'm not going to do my Rick Ross voice the whole time.
Of course.
He's like, I was in the hills in L.A. because, you know, Miami doesn't have hills. And we were driving around the hills and I was just smoking some gourmet green and I was just smoothed out. And I just started feeling like invincible. It's like, I got 30 cars. And what he does a lot of times, he starts chanting stuff and he starts coming up with the ad-libs and hook it. Spliff TV.
Yep.
Spliff actually transcribes a lot of it for
and
him.
He's writing the lyrics for Lex Luger. Yeah.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
He'll transcribe the improv?
Yeah. Some of it. So a lot of it, like a lot of times if Rick can't lay it down, you know, Spliff is like, he's managing. He's the videographer. Yeah, now he has a team of guys under him. He's also A&R and bringing him a lot of beats. But he literally will be with Ross and transcribe some of the things he says. Is like,
it's crazy. Yeah.
It's built off that, you know. Yeah. That's what he does on Twitter. Like the other day he tweeted Victor or Victim. Like he'll come up with a little tidbit he'll build the thing. Like while they was telling me he got this, like you look at his console, like he played me some song like Holy Ghost and it was really good. And he's like, you know, he's like, Don't let the devil in. Like, you know, the Rick Ross inflection shit.
Yeah.
And then it's like he has sketches of songs and titles and ideas that he has. And he's like, he just got like a song, Larry Bird. Like, it's just Larry Bird. And he's like,
now he sounds like Little B.
Yeah, it's a little B-esque, I guess. But no, he definitely is in a creative zone that like is, I think people have definitely connecting to like in that conversation. Like you said, that people are really like, this guy's approach to making music is engaging to people. Like people are connecting to it. Like he picks great music that enhances his voice, you know, what he's bringing to the table. It's like kind of drawing people in.
Yeah. So you get the call or you get the go call. Ahead. Go ahead to do this, you know.
I wanted to go down to Miami and knock out the whole. I was so behind with the issue that I was like, okay, let me start thinking, what the fuck am I going to do? Because I got to interview all the four features. So I was like, okay, I'm getting cool with Ross and Khaled a little bit. I'm going to do Ross, Khaled, Busta's down there. And maybe Wale will be down there. And I'm going to be in Miami for a week. I'm going to do all the interviews and I'm going to get it done. So then, obviously, you know, Ross leaves town.
Right.
I get with Busta. You know, this one's leaving here. It's a nightmare. So finally, I do get it done. And I knocked it out like in about 4 or 5 days. The whole issue of like writing, transcribing, and
Do you go in there with an idea of how the story is going to, you know, sit and how you're
going to... I doubt. Can you with Rick Ross?
I don't know. I can't. Yeah, no, I couldn't with Rick Ross. My whole thing was like, Let's just lay it out. Like, what's going on with you? Like, because the thing is, like, you know, we talked a little about the correctional thing, and his whole thing is the same stance he sort of took when he did the BET special, where you know, he's trying to vaguely say like he tried to go legit, or like his people that he knew, street people, and they thought he should make these kind of things and go to clean and narrow route, like play football, do these kind of things. But you know, obviously being attracted to the street life and all those things and observing things of being from that community, you know, he was inspired by that. But I think he always wanted to be a rapper. So, you know, with him, it's just a conversation. I just feel like we just started flowing. And he told this great story about how he was in New York when his birthday, he did an event. Like, this is like way up in Washington Heights, like 200 something street, like right. that. So he did a party, he got invited to do a party, like a club fee. So he shows up, he's like, you know, I'm in there kicking it with street niggas. Niggas giving me colognes and cakes. Cakes and give it to real live street niggas. You know, you could appreciate this type of appreciation.
He talks in this, like,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, he speaks elegant, in this code that's like, so it's like I think that what it was when I interviewed him, it's like not having a plan, kind of like you said, Jensen, but just kind of trying to play to the flow of the conversation, because he's going to set that tone. And then I think it's a pretty good Q&A.
When he speaks, it's like if you go to someone's house and they have columns, you just immediately know they're kind of classic, but in like a kind of weird way, like in a Persian rug way. You know what I mean?
Do you get a good sense of like what his real life is like being around him?
His life is that. I think his life has now become, you know, I'm the best guy in rap. I need to be embraced by the street dudes. If I go to Atlanta, I want to be with the street dudes in Atlanta.
Right.
I want to be connected to this. I want to go to this. You know, I want to go to the studio. I want to do shows, like organization. Everyone's going to come to Swish and Sweet. We're going to stay up four days straight and make 70 records. Like, he's just living. I think he loves. Like, he finally got it. He finally got the shot. Like, you know, everybody wants to be rap, so I'm sure when you got signed, you have this dream, you're going to be, not to make you cry, Jensen, you know what I'm saying?
I don't know why Elliot's bringing it up.
He's just very aware of the moment. Yeah, so I think he's basking, he's literally basking in the moment.
He should.
And he's living that life. Like, he's, you know, shows, what they do, studio.
They spend $1 million at a strip club?
You know? Right. Club, balling with drug dealers and street dudes and strippers and living the life. Yeah. And, you know, he's He's epitomizing.
We saw him at at Summer Jam last year.
Yeah.
And he had somebody next to him on stage who looked like his doppelganger, like exactly like him.
Yeah.
Dom DeLuise?
No, he was No, it looked exactly like Ross, like the full beard, like the whole costume. It was like Saddam Hussein had those like
fake guns in case Saddam Hussein.
Right. Did you see any of those fake guys or no?
Nah. I didn't see those dudes. All right. A lot of Mass Pike Miles.
Talking about a lot of creative control. A lot of let's talk the Rosenberg Rap Radar connection. Which is something obviously a lot of people think about.
There's a twinkle in your eye when you say that.
I might have a little thing to talk. And I don't necessarily see it as much as some others do.
Okay.
But a lot of people do think because you do have a financial economic situation with Interscope, you know, it's the house that Rosenberg built, kind of, in a sense.
Well, I technically don't have it. We're technically partners. Me and Paul started the company, Machiavelli 71, that owns Rap Radar.
Okay.
So I'm technically not in business with Interscope.
Okay. No, but I mean, he is obviously...
Oh, he's Mr. Interscope.
He's obviously married to it. Yeah. So what I guess I'm asking...
Well,
I'm
he's actually married to Marshall.
True. Who in turn is the cash cow.
Right.
And you know Jimmy doesn't give a fuck as long as Marshall's hot. I mean, Marshall's hot again.
As long as I'm
Marshall sold some records. Yeah. Okay, bring these crazy slaughterhouse dudes in. We'll put out a shady record.
Joe Budden sounds depressed. Why would we want Joe Crooked Eye? Haven't we had him before? This is not the first time we had Joel.
Is this mood swing music?
Yeah, why? This Joel guy, we've had Joel before. Jimmy Iovine impression.
That's a really close Jimmy.
It's good. Yeah, I also did a
great beat for Yella. I co-signed that.
Will did the Super Bowl and he looked like a machine. He looked like an actual robot. I could do a Jimmy all day, by the way. Do you feel when the criticism comes that you won't be able to really attack something that goes on at Shady, or you wouldn't be able to really attack something in Interscope?
Well, the beauty is, what is there to attack? I mean, that's the thing that's funny about it, is that Eminem is on his kind of like second leg of like success.
Correct.
Where, you know, I guess it's lucked out. I mean, but a lot of times the ones I really attack are the ones that kind of do stupid shit. I mean, the blog culture is more about like, you out here make a bad move. Eminem is so guarded. Does he really make a bad move? Like, you know, like...
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Which one?
Obi Trice? D12?
Yeah, but that's been going on during the Rap Radar years.
Oh, exactly. But if Slaughterhouse becomes the new D12, do you say this was a bad move?
But I never... If you look at the blogosphere and you're like, okay, what are the blogs that really support Slaughterhouse? People don't look at Rap Radar. No. They look at the Nah Rights and those sites.
So,
yeah.
But I mean, if it does...
People think now, is that going to change now? Like, am I going to get the Slaughterhouse exclusives and, you know, I'm going to have a... You know, I'm cool with Joel's manager, Mike Caron, Haitian Mike, I call him. So I did a show with him and I have my Yawa t-shirt on. But like, you know, I'm not... You know, super cool with those guys, like the relationships that they built outside of that, like Budden and Low Key or Budden and Misinfo, and you know, so it's relationships. What I'm saying is that
that's why LA can never make fun of our shit.
But in the blog culture, you tend to more so, if you're gonna attack somebody, you like Lil Kim example, you attack someone that's out there publicly making stupid moves.
But what about even just
like
editorially?
When Shine's putting out bad song after bad song.
I understand, but what about just editorially? What if? And I understand that we're not, you know, not for the hits, not for the controversy. Editorially, if you believe that Slaughterhouse ends up being a bad decision based on them being, it's possible that no one will reach out to this battle rap. It might not cross over.
Yeah.
I think that Odd Future, we don't have to worry about that. They're going to be famous for being. They're going to be famous for being non-mainstream.
Elliot, I guarantee you'll never have to write a bad thing about
Don't
Tyler.
Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. As far as Slaughterhouse,
if you do, you're a faggot. Exactly. If you write a bad thing about Tyler.
We know that. On this end, it's like with Slaughterhouse, this could backfire. If it does backfire, do you feel comfortable on Rap Radar being like, this was a bad decision, this isn't working out, or because you're in a relationship with Paul, does it feel like you have to say?
Pretend I like it. That's all I could do. I don't have to pretend I like it. Do I have to? I'd have to be careful about how I criticize it. I wouldn't personally attack it like you're saying. Like, it's the measures of how you do something.
That's cool.
But there's also how often in Rap Radar do you see me really sit in judgment of every particular project? Yeah. Like I just feel I woke up today and I'm gonna write 1,000 words about why Young Jeezy's in this weird creative slump. You know what I mean? Usually, what happens with Rap Radar, the energy of hip hop is, like you said, it's Our Future mania, right? Like, you can't go anywhere the last 2 weeks. Our Future.
Jeff's mother asked Jeff, give me Our Future.
Yeah, totally. Give me all these. So what we
it's my mom too.
So the
you,
way
no,
the,
it's not your mom.
So the way the culture moves now is that if Slaughterhouse did bomb, it's like everybody say, oh, that sucks, blah, blah, but then they move on quickly. Yeah. Unless Slaughterhouse does dumb things. Like when Joe Budden was like, you know, I challenge Raekwon to a fair one, you know, a square dance.
Square dance, yeah.
You know, those kind of theatrics, you know, we would talk about it and make fun of it, you know. But also, they do, also knowing from you, like, comedy goes a great way. Yeah. I could clown sort of house, but I could do it in a funny way.
Yeah, and that's how Byron lives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that's also the strength, too. Like, the main thing is to not pretend you like something that you don't like.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have business relationships, and then you also have people you're cool with and rapport with people. So you tend to be more sensitive to how to deal with things with those situations out of respect for that.
Yeah.
You know, even if I wasn't in business with them at the end of the day. So you maneuver that way, but you got to maintain your integrity.
Right.
People can't say that Elliot championed something that he didn't believe in.
No, you're lucky basically that they didn't sign like Rampage, the Last Boy Scout. It's Yellow Wolf and Sarhouse. You're very lucky. You don't have much to shit on.
No, but I'm not lucky. I chose somebody like Paul Rosenberg who doesn't get into business with everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No,
he's very strategic of who he aligns himself with. Everyone loves Travis Barker. I mean, I don't know how you feel.
And the High and Mighty.
And yeah. you know, DJ AM and those kind of people. Like, they were people that really. Yeah. Well, Cypress. It's funny, I had beef with Cypress for a while.
Did you really?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, because it was. Stankonia. Remember the Stankonia album where B Real raps?
Yeah.
He's like, fuck Double XL. Your size too small.
That's
I should
right.
get Eminem and I should kill you all. Yeah, because we gave him like a small or medium record review or something. And Paul was managing him at the time.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, the thing with Paul, it's a funny situation where he does really give me a lot of creative control. Mm-hmm. But no, if Eminem record Unauthorized Leak comes out, no, I can't post it on Rap Radar.
What if the N-word tapes came out now?
You have a hypotheticals.
It's where I live, sir. I don't live in reality. I'm still on Interscope in my world.
I'd have to have a discussion with Paul before I did something, but I'd have to do something.
That's super honest.
And I'd have to be as fair about it as I could. And I think that there would be more pressure on Paul to get their response or their response to it. And I'd be on top of that.
That's big.
But that's kind of what happened with The Source, though, because that's exactly what happened. When they broke it and they used that as the leverage to reignite that beef, where's Eminem going to go to explain it and give his version of it?
Yeah.
You know, that's what we had, the one we did, E=MC², cover, blah, blah, and that was huge for us. So
let's just go over a couple covers.
Yeah. Sure.
And the stories behind them at XXL.
XXL. Yeah.
The Shine cover.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about how that affected your relationship with Puff?
Yeah, that same thing. Like Puff, me and Puff for years didn't get along because Puff championed more Source because he had a relationship with Dave Mays, mm-hmm. and Vibe because he was cool with the management there. And I think Emil Wilbekin was the editor-in-chief at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we were the outsiders. We weren't getting those advertising dollars for the label or Sean John or whatever existed. So I had more freedom to say, you know what, I'm going to do an article on Craig Mack and he's going to shit on Puff. I'm going to interview Misa Hilton Brim and she's going to shit on Puff.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd be mad about it, but he's not supporting. So, you know, you play that hand, like, if this story's relevant. And then with Sean, it was the same thing where I felt like everyone was covering the trial from one situation, but nobody would cover it from the other side of the guy who actually shot the gun, Sean.
Yeah.
And everyone was scared to make a critical statement of it because most of the other magazines weren't business with Puffy.
Right, right, right.
So Sean used us as the outlet. So it was beneficial on both. So for years after that, Puff always never really had no love for me. But now we actually have slowly just started building. Yeah, he called in, did me a huge favor calling in when I did the Shade 45 guest hosting show.
Right.
So, you know, that's, again, it's just like the begrudging respect. The beauty of the industry, too, is that the thing about hip hop, the industry itself, is you always go from like fuck you Chris Lighty to then you get cool again and then it's fuck you.
Yeah,
like,
it's got a real WWE vibe.
So you're always fighting. So you're like, that's the thing too. It's like 1 minute you're fighting. I mean, if you go back to the old Rap Radar beginnings, if you just Google Rick Ross and Khaled, we were more on the 50 side clowning them or teasing them or making jokes against them.
Yeah.
Because 50 at that time and that entity were a hotter entity. So you know, with block culture, you kind of favor what the hot thing is, or you try to be groundbreaking and make that statement.
Yeah.
So.
The XXL cover where you had everyone from Rockefeller plus LeBron and, like, you know.
LeBron had a better chance of getting an album out than a lot of the other guys on that cover.
Like, he was on the front fold. Like, they were, like,
Jay wanted,
Bleak and, like, other guys were, like, behind
it. Am I even allowed to talk about these old stories?
Come on, man.
Jay, come on, man. Fuck you. Fuck your lawyer.
I'm the annoying one.
Fuck your lawyer, YM.
Fuck him. Fuck him.
He's probably a Jew. Fuck him.
Man. We know him. We're in the Illuminati with him. Don't worry.
No, Jay, it was crazy. Jay-Z schemes, president of Def Jam. You know, 1 minute you talk to him and he's President Carter mode, or he's back to being Jay-Z. So he actually, I think he wanted Vince Carter and Jason Kidd on the cover too. So it was like, it was really? A hodgepodge.
So you were better
foolery.
Off.
Foolery, yeah. So
why
it worked out.
Why would he
out.
Want them? And what is he? What do you,
and I was like, you don't want Bleak in the front? You don't want Bleak in the front? Yeah. No, but that is a great cover. Like, it's funny. Great. It's like, it's so ridiculous that it's like, it's just so over the top. But the best out of that is that shot of Jay and Kanye with JFK,
that's,
Bobby Kennedy.
That's the best.
That's all. And that segue to Respect to help me stay on my promo
run.
Please.
Yeah.
That's the idea of what I'm trying to do with Respect, which is that I want to have the best images. Like, if you look at the new issue,
Waka Flocka Flame.
We did an incredible Rick Ross shoot. No, but he looked, that made him look like he's a star. No, nobody ever presented him in a way where, you know, this guy's hot. He's had an impactful year. He deserves to be looked at and presented in a certain way. And I think that magazines don't really do that anymore.
No, but can you just talk real quick about the reaction to the Waka Flocka cover? Because a lot of people were like, wow, you had legends, proven people. And then you had Waka Flocka Flame who had just put his first
album. I love to stir it up. Like you said,
a dope little subtitle. Wasn't it Hits?
Haters, Hits Strongest Sign Haters.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was just a situation where I just felt like, okay, you know, artists nowadays, it's hard to get an exclusivity because everybody wants to be on everything. Minaj wants to, he'll pose for any magazine.
Sure.
And I'll wear this wig and show my ass here and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, you know, Waka was somebody that nobody was had the courage to put on the cover. So it worked out great. Plus, I wanted to make that statement because he's that type of person where you mention his name, people really think, even to this day, I was in the gym the other day, it's like, we were talking about Waka Flocka. Waka Flocka? Nigga's stupid. He's fucking, like, he's that divide, like, that people, like, he's a galvanizing, he's a polarizing figure.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Rick Ross is. So I think that if there's any kind of formula that's developed with Rap Radar, is that I want to, like, cover, like, especially for the cover, a polarizing figure.
Right.
Somebody that thinks that, you know, like Rick Ross, that I get it now. This guy's super talented. I'm over the whole CO whatever thing. Yeah. He's a dope rapper. I'm bumping his music. And then you have people that still ride with 50s and that culture, and they're just like, fuck it, he's a fraud.
Yeah.
I'm never going to rock with it. All you people are being blinded.
Those people are minimal.
Blah, blah. Yeah.
They're minimal now.
Yeah, but that's like the Waka thing. So I love that. I love that kind of person. To me, those are the bigger people, the people that garner love and hate, like myself.
And
Jeff Rosenthal.
Jeff, who hasn't been with us, he's actually sick. Yeah, he's been in and out of podcasts. So he just went in the other room to puke, I'm sure.
I make him sick.
Yeah. No. Looking back, what is the XXL cover you wish didn't happen? Is there something?
Say Chingy.
Chingy on the cover.
Yeah.
And I messed with you on Twitter when we went back and forth about me being annoying. About
you shitting on one of them, right? What was it?
No, it's Common got an XXL for B.
Oh, yeah, we did some bad XXLs.
I like the Clips album.
For
Lord Willing, right?
Yeah. No, it's just a situation where, like, I mean, I had Bonsu Thompson for many years, who's now the editor at The Source. You know, I would fight sometimes, but if he really felt strongly and the whole staff was like,
no, you're good.
The whole staff was feeling something. You know, you either fight or you eventually give in to the masses in the situation. You try to be as communal as possible.
Yeah.
You know, you have the power
to
say,
your magazine.
Fuck that. So it's like the energy's that, and it's you're making that quick judgment call. So some of them pan out and look ridiculous, but then some you overchampion, and some you're very cautious to not say. Like, for whatever reason, like when we got 50's album, we hated 21 Questions. Like, we couldn't stand 21 Questions. The whole staff, for whatever reason, we all just hated
grown
it.
Man music.
So we didn't want to give him an XXL.
Right.
Because we was like, 21 Questions, next single. Da, da, da. But obviously, Get Rich or Die Trying is a classic.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's an XXL. But back then, you know, our ears were fixated on 21 Questions and not whatever. But, you know, Common being back with Kanye and the beats sound good and the lyrics are good.
Yeah.
You start playing all over, you get in the zone that way. So how you feel about something in that moment may not be how you feel about it 3 months later. I mean, the sad thing now with kids now is that kids forget a song that came out 3 months ago. And now if a record
kids forget
carries that way, then that means something. That means that, wow, okay, you know, we were talking about Black and Yellow. I'm annoyed the hell out of it by this song now because it actually did survive the timeline.
Like, does Black and Yellow get on Wiz Khalifa's record now? Or do you just leave it off?
It has track to. Really?
One. It has to.
I mean, I feel like it's just like at that point, you're like, nah, leave that off. Everyone has it already.
No,
you have to.
They'll sell that.
Yeah.
You have to.
It'll
that's how you build the arc of it. You know?
I hear you. I'm trying to think of other covers.
No, I'm just going to say, can we talk about Carmelo for a minute?
Sure.
You were at Carmelo's first game.
Yeah.
You're sitting behind Lala.
We were a couple of rows behind Lala, two or three. They put the wife in the Jumbotron.
Oh, yeah.
Out here like she's single. Like, what's going on with that? I got dissed. I'm out here. I'm too ugly. Like, what's going on? And then on the other side, I'll give you the industry thing. The other side. So, like, literally on the woods, as they say. Yeah. He wasn't on the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike Kaiser.
Yep.
Who's a little burger. Hashtag little burger. Now the president of Atlantic Records, Kevin Lyles, was there. Yep. Sean Pekas.
Yep.
It's like an industry murderer's row.
Joey Ie,
OG Juan.
Yep. Is OG Juan allowed to be there, by the way?
He's out there. He's representing Hope.
Yeah.
S-Dot Carter Enterprises.
We want Lala on the show.
Yeah.
We're going to.
You know what, Lala? I think I have a crush on Lala.
I ghost wrote for Lala.
Oh, you did?
I did.
That's fresh.
I did. Back before the. I mean, she was an LA radio girl.
Yeah. She's cute in person. Cuter in person than I thought she was.
When I was writing for her, though, she was going through, I hope we get to talk to her in the podcast about it. She was going through this like weird alternative phase. She had like this pink hair and was getting piercings and weird tattoos. And
she's talking to a lot of weird white people at MTV.
Yeah. Yeah. That was even before that. This is right after Ludacris. Yeah. This is when she was with
Chris Lovelova.
She was with Eric Kubici over in at the Beat at the time. Right. But we would love to have her on.
Yeah,
but,
totally.
But
once things cool down.
Yeah. She got a reality show today.
Oh, dope.
Yeah. They booked her. VH1. VH1, yeah. They booked
her. She's locked in with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good deal.
Respect Magazine.
She's actually the next cover.
Right, exactly.
Her and Stacey Dash.
Who else is in this new issue?
We ended up doing Rick Ross. We ended up doing Wale. Right on the, like Jay Electronica signed to Rock Nation right before we did the Waka thing.
Yep.
So I was like, I got to get another rapper that's about to sign a new deal. So Wale, the deal just went down.
Yep.
I did this great piece with Busta Rhymes where we kind of got into detail about the ups and downs of his career from like the beginning to now.
Where is he now?
He's actually
at a gym somewhere.
He's doing crunches. Yeah. He's making records. No, I think he's waiting. I think he's sitting. I think he's technically still signed to Sylvia Rhone at Universal, but he's laying in wait to see where these musical chairs go and where does Chris Lighty go and his L.A. Rego here.
Yeah.
The chess pieces in the music industry.
He's an Aftermath corpse.
That was a great Double XL cover that we talked with Mannion about.
That we talked to Mannion about.
Yeah, yeah. That's so bizarre. Yeah, and it never really worked out. And like I remember that Dre was like, I was able to do. That's the one with Ludacris. That's the beef with Ludacris. Beef with Ludacris and Chingy. I wanted Ludacris Chingy do a cover together, and then they tried. Shaka Zulu tried to strong arm me at the last second and say, we're not going to do it unless Sean is part of it. And like literally, it was like the day before the shoot. I'm like, tell him go fuck himself. We're not doing it. So I pulled the cover. I go online. All hip hop's like Eve and Busta Rhymes signed to Aftermath. I call Interscope because I had the bat phone.
Yeah, right.
So then they go to Dre
it's
and
green.
I'm like,
it's colored green.
So then I go to Dre and they're like, Dre, Busta, Eve, and then he's like, Dre says, I'm not gonna do it unless you get this guy the game in it. My new artist, the game. I'm like, I like the game. He's like, who kid rapping?
Yeah.
And then I think 50 started feeling a way about it. So if you see the cover, Dre's wearing a G-Unit t-shirt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that was a way to kind of like keep everybody happy.
I like the Aftermath corpse game.
Do you call it the corpse?
That's corpse game. It's almost, Last Emperor.
It's almost
I could play this game all day. Beast.
It's almost as good as Bad Boy.
You didn't cry when you saw the I Need a Doctor video? You
didn't I didn't. I don't, the M. Night twist ending that I don't understand. Like it's like The Village. I'm like, what? I don't.
Why does it go to Eazy-E's grade?
I don't understand. Does that mean that's when it ended? I'm not saying it's
art, baby.
Totally. That was directed by Orson Welles. Totally. I don't understand that video. So. who are future hopes for Respect covers?
Who's the first female going to be?
Let's have an editorial meeting.
Yeah.
Now
I would love to reach out to Chris Clancy. Get his first cover. All
right. Yeah, no, he's out there, right?
Yeah. No covers yet?
I actually heard of a cover that they're doing.
Okay.
I'm not at liberty to
say. All right.
So I'm gonna let them have that. Yeah. No, but I think being one-on-one with Tyler would be interesting. I think the great thing about Respect is that I'm doing the interviews of the four features I'm choosing. That's kind of the formula that I'm doing now. Yeah. So I think me and Tyler, a kid that was like born in the 90s, I saw some article where he was saying like he bought Dre 2001 for Christmas. His mother bought it. He was 8 years old.
Yeah.
And that's like the first issue XXL I did. So it's like this kid, I'm 40 years old, interviewing a fucking 19-year-old kid that is crazy.
Well, he thinks we're antiques.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Literally, he calls us antiques.
Can I give you a dark horse for a cover?
Yes.
Chingy.
No, but the thing is, because I'm so spread out where I only come out a couple times a year, my next cover is coming out 6-7. June 7th.
Okay, June 7th.
Oh, okay.
So maybe Lil Wayne. No, but the main thing too is that it's not in the cover. It's actually going to be in the cover from June till September. So we know what that is, fellas. It's a little thing called summertime.
Yeah.
So I have to be boldly smart and predict which rapper is going to be the big rapper of the summer. But the sad thing is it looks like Rick Ross, and I already did him.
Or Vado.
Yeah. You think Vado's going to run?
No, I don't.
No, but like, who's going to run the summer? I think Ross has a great shot. I think Wiz has a great shot. Yeah. But it might go more pop.
Yeah.
I think Wayne's a dark horse. I mean, Wayne's in the conversation, not a dark horse.
Yeah, sure.
But I think some people don't like his post-jail vocal inflection.
New record, from Kanye, right?
Yeah. You know? Then you have Watch the Throne and Detox hanging over everything. But,
Mac Miller.
Yeah, no. Get what you want on the phone.
BMF was the one last time. It's like, what? Who's really gonna make that? Who's really gonna have the energy of being the rapper? Like, it's like
I bet it will be Ross.
Other artists aren't really in position. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, is a Jeezy gonna come out of nowhere and get it together?
Can I throw in a dark horse?
Yeah.
Pusha T.
Yeah. Really? You think so?
Possible. He has a song with Kanye or something. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like he's that street. He's got a street anthem right now, right? Oh God, is getting spins on.
His manager doesn't like me.
No.
Stephen Victor. Yes. I don't know why he doesn't like me. Ask him.
Well, let's get him on here. Let me secret it. Hold on. I'm going to secret him on the cover. Okay.
He doesn't like me.
What
no, but Pusha was actually, he was going to be in that issue with Ross, but it didn't work out.
What, when you were at XXL, was that when the freshman issue started? Or no?
Well, I did a different version. Actually, technically, it's a yes and no answer. I did a Leaders of the New School, Hip-Hop's Next Superstars, and it was like all guys that kind of had a single out, but they hadn't put out their first album yet. So it was like Lupe, Saigon, Little Boozy, but more established. Actually, Joel and Crooked were on the second game. Ended up being Slaughterhouse. So it wasn't branded freshman, but then a year after I wasn't there, Daytwan and Vanessa branded it freshman, and they did Wale and Asher Roth and B.O.B. and those guys.
Charles Hamilton.
You know, the now right driven that generation.
Sure, yeah.
And they called it freshman. So that was the second one, but it was the first one branded with the freshman title.
So, this is 2 years in a row. You've been gone, so I'm not dissing your editorial thing. There's last year is a freshman issue where they list the top 10 people, Drake or Nicki Minaj not on it.
Yeah, well, they refused because they were mad, I think, as far as I know. They were mad that they weren't in the Asher. They weren't in the conversation with the Asher Roth Wale that year, especially Drake.
Right.
I think Drake felt he deserved to be in that. I think a lot of what Drake's emergence after that, like with the mixtape and all that, he was mad that he wasn't being recognized. I think it actually motivated him as an artist.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the thing. That's the thing that's happened. Like you look at last year, they didn't do Votto and Waka Flocka, and they kind of emerged out of it.
Yeah.
So that's what happens a lot when you do that. I mean, that's the energy of it, and that's what makes it exciting because it's basically a list brought to life, and obviously the internet culture is all list and
debate.
And who's whatever. But what you're always going to have is the one that you didn't put is going to fucking blow up out of
nowhere.
Yeah,
and then Charles Hamilton's going to be like peeing in a pickle jar.
You're going to have the crazy fall from grace story like Charles Hamilton.
Yeah.
So, you know, well, that's kind of what you do.
This year, no Tyler. I guess he decided not to be on it. So obviously that's the shining not person on it. But I mean, you look at some of these people in here and
you're like, who are these people?
Yeah, who are these people? You know, what Meek, you know, is Meek really going to, I mean,
he's with Ross, man. Come on, man.
So the cosign gets
you on message, there. Stay on message, baby.
I understand. That gets you on there? I mean, Kendrick, I understand, too.
The idea is that you pick these guys and maybe one or two of them will surprise everybody and be that thing. Like, I guess for the original one, B.O.B. was a success. Like, Asher wasn't a success on that level, right? Like, who would you pick? You know, Wale now's got another second chance, but he was like, so I guess B.O.B. and maybe Kid Cudi out of that.
Yeah.
Kind of the ones that were.
Actually,
so you maybe get one or two.
Yeah. Real quick, let's talk about Wale. Do you like Wale under?
I don't get it.
Wait, hate Wale. Everybody hates Wale.
No, I actually like Wale. I like some of his music, but I think it just sort of, you know.
I just want a light on.
What's that?
Dark in here.
Turn the light on.
I feel like we're running Playboy Sirius channel.
I'm getting scared because the other Rosenthal brother's here and he's wearing a YMCMB hoodie on and he's standing behind me. I'm a little concerned.
Seriously, like Wale, like, do you fuck with him musically?
Me and Wale ended up being cool personally. That's what's funny about it. And then, you know, I liked some of his stuff, didn't like some of his stuff. And then after the record didn't do well, you know, I felt like he was in a kind of a funk, obviously, that you get when you feel like people are fronting on you. And I was like, look, man, you just got to stay at it. You got a great work ethic. I see what you're doing. You know, make another mixtape. You know, we had conversations, and that's when he did the sequel to the Seinfeld.
Right.
Yeah. So I just try to encourage him, you know, to stay in the conversation because I think he's talented. He just hasn't fully put it all together yet. But it's funny that I also like about him now is that, again, I like people that people love and hate. And, like, you say his name, and, like, there's a lot of people that just really don't like him. And then the people that really roll Cudi. And then Cudi's album didn't do well. And I heard he's not happy that his album didn't do well. It's a weird thing. Like, you know, you have these statements like, we don't fuck with you musically. And they become bigger than who the people that you're talking about. Because we're in this Twitter internet culture where it's like, you want those memes and those GIFs and those pull quotes that, like, stand the thing. So, you know, it's made him part of the fodder of the conversation. So I like mess with those
My
people.
Question being, is Wale able to sign to Rick Ross and still be the guy who talks about buying sneakers on eBay?
I think so, yes. Because I think Ross is going to let him, and I think Todd and Joey are gonna embrace that.
Yeah, Ross is quietly trying to prove that he could be like the way Birdman could have Jay Sean and have all these weird acts.
Right. That shitty, you know, Rudolph guy.
Tina Marie. Shitty Rudolph.com.
Shitty Rudolph.
Yes, yeah, so everyone wants to prove that they're, you know, that they're Russell Simmons and that they could have an army and acts, and they're not just defined by that, you know? Yeah. And you know what Wale could also have, too? I think the thing about Wale is that Wale wants to make that big crossover record. He wants to be... I don't think he has this problem with being with, like, the you know, taking some Will.i.am old fans away and be that whatever. So one thing Rick hasn't really done is he hasn't really gone pop, like mainstream crossover Z100. Aston Martin Music's probably the first record that kind of got him in totally. That. So Maybach would benefit from a Wale kind of paving the role of that, having a first single with a Lady Gaga type, you know, thing that actually works.
Absolutely.
It takes Maybach to that other side.
Yeah. Let's play a fun game. Let's go to Rap Radar. And let's do just rapid fire as we wrap up. Let's just do a rapid fire on some of these people. I want to hear your thoughts on some of the people. We'll keep it short so we can get through a lot.
I did this with Flex once. He's like, talk to me, Method Man. Well,
I'll drop bombs when you're answering to make you feel more comfortable.
Right. No, but it's all people that were kind of struggling. So he'd be like, let's talk about Bow Wow.
Oh, man.
Method Man.
I wasn't going to do that.
That's a good flex.
Little B.
He's the
bass god.
He's a pretty bitch. Nah, he's the thing with him and I had to, like, I'm still understanding these guys, like him and Tyler. Like, I think it's like a situation where, you know, there's these 90s rappers, and we had Soulja Boy, which represented one thing, and now you got these other guys that they're just unconventional, and they're selling a lot of this angst and, like, teen angst, and no one understands me, and I'm gonna go take a shit right now, and, like, I'm gonna wipe my nose, and I just fucked your girl, you're a fuck you in your ass, and all that. They say outrageous shit, so... You know, B-Dot said something about horrorcore, and then Tyler got all mad about it.
That's
like the worst thing to say.
Because that is what it is.
But
I think the problem I have with some of these artists is that I want to cut through. Like, I get it. Like, Little B, you'll say these catchphrases. I'm saying it now. It's funny on Twitter. You have personality. You have a presence. You know, him and Tyler. But, like, then I go, okay, well, what are the songs? Like, if I'm in an A&R meeting, what are the songs am I listening to? What am I missing? So I think it's hard for me sometimes with these guys. Like, I want to know what are the 5 Little B songs that I should listen to. So I'm still educating myself. I'm a work in progress with those kind of guys because I'm always more song driven or the actual art first. So I love these guys' images and I think they're interesting and they're part of the conversation, but I don't champion. But also then I have to understand the ones that aren't the novelties because I'm not going to do 50 Tyson and Antoine Dobson.
Right.
And, you know, I'm only going to do Kat Stacks if Soulja has cocaine on her, on her boobs.
Right,
I'm not
going
to do everything she did. So I'm not world star. So, you know, I think that Rap Radar sort of straddles that line where it's like they have to prove their merits in, like, the real world. Like, okay, if you're Little B, what's the song now? What are you really doing? Do you have a record deal? Blah, blah, blah. So.
Yeah. J. Cole?
Cole, I think, is very talented. I hope that he can make that right record. I hope he doesn't become so fixated that if he doesn't make... He's the type of dude where he doesn't want to make... He told me this when I did the interview with him for Respect that, you know, he doesn't want to make the critical acclaimed rap album that doesn't have hit records on it.
Yeah.
I think he could easily do that. You know, he could easily do that. He could rap very well. He can make a record that everyone says is dope and it doesn't sell anything.
Right.
You know, he wants to make hits, but I think he's still struggling to figure out how to make hits that still kind of represent him.
Right, totally.
You know, and I think it's a lot of false starts with that. And I am concerned at that point because I think he is very talented. So hopefully he can figure out what the right thing is and be bold enough to just make that decision, put it out. And then, you know, deal with the consequences of it.
He's a monster.
I think lyrically, the funny thing is, I think lyrically, he's actually even getting better. You know?
I would agree.
And I think that he's a very, very good rapper. You know, I just think that he has to figure out how to make hit records or try to make singles, at least, that he feels still represent him.
And you like him because he went to school in Queens.
So. Obviously. We'll do the last one. We'll say Lupe. You know, I love the new single with Skylar. Glenn Beck is a rapist. I said rapist.
Yeah.
Glenn Beck is a rapist. That's not in the song, though. Glenn Beck is a racist. The crazy 9/11 even conspiracy theory at the beginning of the verse. I think it's finally he has some sort of voice.
I'm back. He's in it. I think I'm going to write a blog where I apologize to him or I apologize to Atlantic because I really thought when they put him on ice and said, we'll put your record out in 6 months.
Yeah.
I thought your shit's never coming out.
Yeah.
You're a big dummy. You keep letting these labels manipulate you.
Shouts to Mike Kaiser.
I don't buy into your I buy into the fact that you're a very good rapper.
Yeah.
I recognize that. I think you have something special about you. I think all the people I respect co-sign you. But you know, it was like he did this thing where he had that show in Chicago, and it was like a 5-hour show, and he showed all these
right.
YouTube montages, and like, I just decided that day that like, fuck him. Like, yeah. I'm just gonna say it. Like, it's too culty. He's yeah. not in the conversation. He hasn't made a record in a fucking long time. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah, like I say, let's cut through the bullshit.
Yeah.
You haven't made a record in 2 years. Like, yeah. you're not in my conversation. Like, right. so I don't buy this whole culty thing. And, you know, I started taking jabs at him, and I did the blackout, and I don't get it. And then he took offense, and it started to snowball. But you know, he played the game, and now he's got records out that you could tell that he's you know, he's actually played to Atlantic and given them what they want, but maintain who he is and make these kind of weird, lush kind of records. And I don't necessarily bump it every day, but I respect it, and I respect that he's getting his vision out. I think I like to think that I helped, you know, anger him and fuel him, and I think it works that way too. That. You know, if you're going to be a major signed artist, you know the pitfalls with all that.
Oh, yes.
It's like you're going to have to deal with the politics.
Yeah.
So then don't cry to me about the politics because right. you're going to, you know, if you don't want to do that, then don't be on that situation and put out mixtapes. And like, there's no excuse that you can't get great art to me and stay relevant. So I think that he played the game and now it looks like he's in a great position to do what he wanted to do. So I applaud him for that. He proved me wrong. Well, and I like that.
I like to think that you fueled my fire.
No, I think you put the podcast. I think the thing is that obviously I like the Rosenthal dudes. You know, Jeff sometimes when he shows up.
Yeah. Jeff when he's not vomiting.
And you were the outsider, but now the more I see your dedication to the podcast, and I think your guys' chemistry is getting stronger, and I think people aren't talking over each other, and I don't feel like you're like bullying for the number one slot on the show. And I think it's getting better. But again, tough love. You know, the annoying host and all that. You know,
I'm putting record.
1-1-A.
Yeah.
I still think Glenn Beck is a rapist. This has been the Hype Man Podcast. Yeah. My name is Jensen. Jeff's not here. Yeah, he's in.
Is this the first one when he wasn't in the
MC? No, he missed Sean C. Yeah, he's been sick, so it's a bummer. Yeah. But the Hype Man Podcast, we want to thank Elliot Wilson, who this is a long time coming. We've had Twitter people ask us when is Elliot Wilson coming on.
That's cool.
And by that, I mean our parents.
Right.
You guys, thanks so much, Hype Man. We'll catch you next week.
Yeah.
All right, bye-bye.